Well, I'm glad to get to be in your shop and glad to be with you. I think my assignment is to remind you of what we all know. So what I'll say will be very familiar to you, but we think that to talk about the background of the Jubilee and the Exodus narrative is important because how we think about money depends upon the narrative in which we situate money. And if you already heard everything I have to say about this, because I've said it a few times, you are free not to listen to me, but to think instead, is this too close? But to think instead of three pivotal moments in your childhood when you had abrupt learning about money. I'm going to talk about the big story of money, but we all have little stories. So I assume we are here tonight because we all know Pharaoh's narrative about money. And that narrative is based in scarcity. He thought there wasn't enough. There wasn't enough grain. There wasn't enough storehouses. There wasn't enough bricks. There wasn't enough slaves. So his strategy was to accumulate everything and to put the producers in debt and finally reduced debt to slavery, and then he was free to treat these discounted people with violence. We all know that story because it is a story that is being acted out before our very eyes under the magic word austerity. Austerity is the monopoly of wealth to make the people without resources pay the freight. And we are here because we know that story and because we know that story is not true. We are also here because we know the response of the maker of heaven and earth to that story. And the extraordinary thing about the Exodus narrative is that the maker of heaven and earth was allied with the debt slaves against the managers of austerity. This is indeed God's preferential option for the poor. And what we also know is that when we are allied with the creator of heaven and earth, it is possible to depart the narrative of austerity under Pharaoh. This is the most unbelievable thing, because unless you are a rare exception, Pharaoh's narrative has a deep, deep grip on all of us. And so when they were two verses out of Egypt, they wanted to go back. They wanted to go back because their slavery felt comfortable to them, and their entry out of slavery felt risky and threatening. So I assume, roughly speaking, that you are like me. You know you want to go, but it feels really scary. And the reason we keep reciting this narrative, it's kind of like any of the recovery programs. We meet regularly to tell the story so that we don't fall off the wagon into our addiction to austerity. So we know about the departure, and we know that when they departed Pharaoh, they ended up in the wilderness, and we know about the wilderness. Now, I think there are two things about the wilderness that are definitional. The first one is the reason they wanted to go back is that they were in two verses into it. They recognized that the wilderness is a place without viable life support systems. So Pharaoh's got all the money, Pharaoh's got all the jobs, Pharaoh's got all the resources. And Pharaoh has taught us to imagine that there are no resources outside Pharaoh's gift. But the second thing we know about the wilderness, which makes it compelling, is that the wilderness is a zone of possibility that is beyond the reach of Pharaoh. And you cannot be beyond the reach of Pharaoh except being in the wilderness where there are no viable life support systems. The other thing we know about this story of departure is that they were surprised by bread. The bread just appeared. This is a mumbling way of the biblical narrative saying, I'm not going to tell you where that bread came from, so I'll just say it came from heaven. And they discovered there was ample water. You just had to hit the right rock. And there was ample quail. I've just been working on that narrative is Numbers 11. Maybe you know it comes up in the lectionary in a few weeks, so that's why I'm working on it. And it is, Numbers 11 is their desire to go back, and they complain to Moses, and Moses complains to God, and then he gets really angry with God, and he says, these are not my people, they're your people. Why don't you do something about them? And then God says to Moses, well, why don't you give them something to eat? He says, where am I going to get something to eat? Why don't you give us some quail? And that really makes God mad. And God says, I'll give you quail. I'll not only give you quail for a day or for 2 days or for 20 days. I'll give you quail for a whole month. I'll give you quail, and I will stuff it up your noses. So the title of my sermon in Mobile, Alabama is Quail Stuffed Up Our Noses. The wilderness turned out to be a place of abundance. And the big question for Israel, this is what I want you to get, is how shall we administer the abundance? That's the big question. You don't have to worry about administering the abundance if you believe the narrative of scarcity. But what we're having a conversation about, how shall we administer the abundance? Because there really is an abundance if it can be torn out of Pharaoh's narrative. So I just want to suggest to you that there are three decisions that Israel made that I'm going to mention. They made some others about administering the abundance. The first decision they made is that there is abundant time. Pharaoh didn't think there was abundant time. Pharaoh's whiplash of brick quotas on the slaves is, no, you cannot take time off. And so they defied Pharaoh by the celebration of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a public performance of the conviction that we have more than enough time to do everything that needs to be done for the neighborhood. Now, as long as we are inured to Pharaoh's narrative, we cannot believe that, so we remain workaholics and we remain electronically connected 24/7 and on and on and on. Sabbath is a time for neighbors. So the second administrative decision they made, there is abundant time. They made a decision that there is an abundance of resources. And so Moses gives them this incredible commandment called the Year of Release, that every 7 years, you have to cancel debts so that people can be restored to viable membership in the community. And if you look at that commandment in Deuteronomy 15, the most amazing grammatical force of that text in verses 1 to 18 is that there are six absolute imperatives. Now, if you do not know Hebrew, you'll have to take my word for this. But in biblical Hebrew, there are no adverbs. They don't have any adverbs. So the way they intensify a verb is that they repeat the verb. So you say, I want to give. If you say, I want to really give, you say, I give. And there are six of those in this commandment. I know of nowhere else in the Hebrew Bible that there are six of these intense verbs, imperatives, which is to say that Moses said, I really mean this. And then he says in that text, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted. Isn't that wonderful? If you live in Pharaoh's narrative of austerity, we are likely to be hard-hearted and tight-fisted, and it shows up every day in our political rhetoric in the United States. So the argument of this Deuteronomy 15, this second administrative decision, is that there are enough resources so that there need be no permanent underclass, but the asset community is obligated to share its resources generously with the debtor community in order for the sake of a viable neighborhood. So they made a decision about Sabbath as abundant time, about the debt cancellation as abundant resources, and then thirdly, the Jubilee year at the end of 49 years, they made a decision that there are abundant numbers of neighbors. And if there are an abundant number of neighbors, then you got to act differently. I want to say one other word about the word neighbor. I look often at the Ten Commandments. I'm an Old Testament teacher. And what I discovered about the Ten Commandments is that the word neighbor does not occur in the Ten Commandments until the Tenth Commandment. And the Tenth Commandment, as you know, is thou shalt not covet. And the word neighbor is used three times. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife, patriarchal society. Thou shalt not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, what I was taught about the Ten Commandments is mean don't feel envious of somebody who has. That's not what it's about. It's about do not have policies of acquisitiveness that sees things that belong and are needful to other people. So the Ten Commandments are to be understood as an act of resistance against Pharaoh's austerity. And I think you can line that out for all ten. Pharaoh had no respect for the holy God. Pharaoh had no respect for any neighbors. And if you do not have respect for God or for neighbor, we will become acquisitive. So I think the question for us to discuss tonight is first, is there abundant time? And how should we use our time differently? Second, are there abundant resources? And how shall we deploy our resources differently? And thirdly, are there abundant neighbors? And who is the neighbor that is now in need of debt cancellation and Jubilee? It is simply an administrative question. And we are the administrators.